and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 21st, 2020. The United Nations says COVID-19 related restrictions in South Sudan is preventing service delivery.
We know, all of us know, that babies will not heed the restriction movements. They will not heed social distancing. When the time is right to come out, they will come out. So the services are needed more than ever.
And residents of Yambio and Zara towns in Western Equatorial State say they lack essential goods due to COVID-19 restrictions.
There is a loss in the businesses. People are not buying goods anymore like the usual ones.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Humanitarian workers in South Sudan say the COVID-19 pandemic has disrupted delivery of other health services, including reproductive health and HIV. The country representative of the United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA, says the world's attention is directed towards the fight against coronavirus, leaving other healthcare areas neglected. Manyang David Maya reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking today at an event in Juba where reproductive kits were handed over to South Sudan's Health Ministry, Dr. Mary Otiano, the country representative for the United Nations Population Fund in South Sudan, says COVID-19 has diverted world attention away from important health services.
We should not forget that reproductive health needs of women and girls remain and have become even more acute. We know, all of us know, that babies will not heed the restriction movements. They will not heed social distancing. When the time is right to come out, they will come out. So the services are needed more than ever.
Otiano is calling on international donors to continue funding the reproductive health sector alongside the coronavirus response.
UNFPA appeals to donors and health actors to ensure that critical life-saving health services, including for reproductive health, are maintained during this COVID period, which unfortunately has been characterized by unprecedented movement restrictions and diversion of the available resources towards the response. Women will continue getting pregnant. They will need to give birth. Those who are raped will need services. People will need contraceptives, and so we cannot disrupt the services.
Otiano says UNFPA invests more than $4 million every year on reproductive supplies and equipment in response to the needs of the people in South Sudan. This year alone, she says, the agency has spent more than $2.5 million on equipment and supplies. The coronavirus has also disrupted the delivery of services to people living with HIV/AIDS. Benjamin Loki, who is in charge of HIV testing and counseling services at Juba Teaching Hospital, says the number of HIV patients receiving treatments at the center has dropped during the partial lockdown in South Sudan.
We have a cumulative number of people living with HIV in our facility, around 9,500. The active ones who are taking drugs on monthly basis are 3,761. Last April, I think we lost to follow up 61 clients, and still we are on continuation of tracing them to make sure we'll get them back to take their drugs.
To ensure that patients do not drop out of treatment, Loki says his department is providing medicine for 6 months instead of 3 months to some 9,000 patients in Juba.
When COVID-19 came to South Sudan, we changed our strategies of giving drugs to clients. Previously, we were giving drugs for at least 3 months, but when we experienced the disease in the country, then we change our strategy now to give the clients drugs for 6 months at least.
Loki says people living with HIV could die if they contract COVID-19.
It will be worse with them because most of them who have just started drugs, their immunity might have been a little bit lowered, and we are struggling to make sure that they adhere to the treatment so that they are their immune system are boosted up.
As of Wednesday, South Sudan reported 481 confirmed cases, 6 recoveries, and 6 deaths from COVID-19. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, known as OCHA, says the COVID-19 pandemic is hampering efforts to assess people in need of humanitarian assistance in several parts of the country. UN OCHA says renewed violence and insecurity in parts of South Sudan could make life difficult for vulnerable communities across the country. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Andrea Noyes, the acting head of UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, in South Sudan, says fighting COVID-19 amid rising violence in parts of the country is hindering the work of most humanitarian agencies.
The security situation along the road makes it difficult for humanitarians to respond. Violence and insecurity at the time of COVID-19 are creating more challenges for the already vulnerable people. They are also hampering our efforts to access people affected by violence.
Noyes says despite the challenges brought on by COVID-19, it is important to keep the humanitarian operation going in South Sudan.
We are working hard to tackle the COVID-19 outbreak, but are not letting our attention slip from the response that was ongoing before the virus. If we did that, we would risk seeing more people go hungry, more people fall ill from preventable diseases, and more communities compete over resources, some violently. South Sudan has come a long way, but humanitarian needs are still staggering, and we must stay the course.
To ensure that vulnerable people continue to receive the assistance they need, Noyes says humanitarian organizations have to be more creative in how they provide aid while adhering to protective measures for preventing the spread of the virus.
As humanitarian organizations, we have been adjusting the way we work since the risk of COVID-19 first became evident, even before the first cases were confirmed in South Sudan. We are, of course, complying with all of the movement restrictions and hygiene practices advised by the government, but we have also changed the way we deliver aid.
Noyes says humanitarians now distribute food aid every 2 to 3 months rather than delivering it every month, which helps avoid frequent gathering of people and possibly exposing them to COVID-19. But she warns that ongoing violence in hard-to-reach parts of the country, like Lenya County in central Equatorial State, could worsen the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan as thousands of people displaced.
According to the local government, over 6,400 people were displaced, mainly women and children. This number has not yet been confirmed, as many displaced people are in inaccessible areas. Others are cramped up in a school, and some are residing with the host community. Local health authorities and a few humanitarian partners on the ground have provided limited health and nutrition support to the displaced people, especially to young children and pregnant and breastfeeding mothers suffering from malnutrition.
Intercommunal violence around Pieri in Jonglei State last weekend left at least 200 people killed, according to local officials, including a staff member with the France group Medicine Sans Frontiers, or Doctors Without Borders, and 2 other aid workers. Alain Naudejo, the humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, condemned the attack on aid workers in a statement on Wednesday and called on all parties, quote, to step up efforts to protect humanitarians who are taking great risk to their safety in order to provide much-needed assistance to vulnerable communities, end quote. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still on service delivery, some residents of Western Equatorial State say the coronavirus-related lockdowns has affected prices of commodities in their area. The residents say the restrictions have affected livelihood of families who depend on farm produce. A trader in Nzara County says the lockdown has made it difficult for him to buy goods from the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo and Central Africa Republic. Siba Martin Murangi reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking from Nzara County, Abel Dominic, a trader, says the lockdown has negatively affected traders who are no longer making as much profits.
There is a loss in the businesses. People are not buying goods anymore like the usual ones. And also importing the goods from the different countries has made the business to come to have a low income and very, very hard life. As well as, if I can mention, Nzara County was bordering Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo. We have Central Africa, where we used to have markets.
Dominic says the lockdown has hindered almost every livelihood activity in Western Equatorial State.
The civil society, the local organization, the CBOs, association, we actually have a very bad impact of the lockdown. All activities have been suspended. The money has been drawn from the CSO's accounts by the donors. The most activities that is community in Nzara County are now relying on. I'm seeing most of the communities are just, most people do go to the FM and come late night, late evening. They feel that if I don't dig today, I don't know when Corona will go out of this country.
Mary Oliver sells food items in Maridi town of Western Equatoria State. Speaking in simple Arabic via phone, Oliver says following the lockdown, sales are low. She says nowadays she hardly earns enough money to take care of her family's needs.
When I go with my cassava leaves to the market, I sit there for long and no one comes to buy, and I end up pouring it in the river, yet this is where I used to earn money to take care of my children's needs.
Oliver says while there are few people who can still afford to buy goods from the market, prices of consumer goods have skyrocketed following the lockdown.
The coronavirus lockdown has spoiled everything. Nowadays, the price of a bar of soap ranges from 220 South Sudanese pounds to 250 South Sudanese pounds. Before the coronavirus came, a bar of soap was 180 South Sudanese pounds. Salt used to be sold at 75 South Sudanese pounds. But now a packet of salt is 150 South Sudanese pounds.
Gismala Rayson is Secretary General of Nasir Football Club in Mundri, Western Equatoria State. He says due to the lockdown restrictions, youth in his area no longer play football, a game he says united young people in the state before the coronavirus spread to South Sudan. He says the lockdown has forced many idle youth to engage in criminal acts, including theft.
The COVID-19 has really done a lot of negative impact on the community, especially youths. The sport is one of the activities that promotes the unity among the youths. But because of the COVID-19, the sports have stopped, and this has really caused the life of youth to be very miserable.
But one good impact of the lockdown, Western Equatoria residents say, is that many people are now engaged in farming to produce their own food. For VOA News, I'm Seba Martin Murangi in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, who are needed in the fight against the coronavirus? Find out the answer right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
I'll go and buy myself maybe a pair of shoes I always desire to get. I'll go and have a meal I always desire to get, or anything. Depends on what I've achieved.
By spoiling myself. I'm a girl. I go buy myself clothes, shoes, do my hair, my nails. Basic things that will make me look good and happy at the end of the day.
I cook a good meal. I sit down with the children.
My work involves very hard work, so I get very tired. So I reward myself once every month. I do that by swimming and relaxing at the beach with my family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. 9 out of 10 Kenyans were unable to pay their April rents on time as government coronavirus measures pushed nearly half of Kenyans out of work. According to the Kenya Bureau of Statistics, about 50% of Kenyans have been locked out of meaningful economic activities since March this year when the country recorded its first COVID-19 case. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the government has warned that the situation could worsen if the number of COVID-19 cases continue to rise.
Kenya has hit 1,000 mark for the COVID-19 positive cases as the economic outlook looks ugly. Joblessness, business closure, and many other financial problems are what Kenyans have to brace themselves for. In a survey conducted by the Kenya Bureau of Statistics, the study shows labor market has been hit hard. Speaking during the launch of socio-economic impact of COVID-19 on households report, Treasury Cabinet Secretary Ukur Yatani said that Kenyans should get ready for hard times ahead as 21.5% of Kenyans were unable to pay rent in the month of April.
21.5% of the households in Kenya were unable to pay rent for the month of April 2020.
It's clear that the direction that has been given by the government or the employers to stay at home has actually now manifested itself here. Now we've been hit by this shock. Never planned for, never anticipated in any way, and therefore all the parameters and the assumptions that we put in place are now going to change.
In March, the government of Kenya introduced draft measures, among them banning of passenger flights, suspension of learning institutions, a move the government hoped could prevent the spread of COVID-19. Education sector has been hit hard as 24.6% of learners, representing at least 5 million students, have not held a book since schools were closed mid-March. However, teachers in private schools have not been paid for the month they have been out of work. The owners of schools claiming hard times. George Ombeto is a teacher at a primary school in Nairobi, and he has not been paid since March.
The last salary which we received was on 3rd March. That means we were being paid February salary. So kindly, we are asking government to intervene because our bosses now, they're nowhere to be found. We have tried every means. Private school teachers are dying. But now, our bosses have turned against us. They don't even want to see us, for that matter. They can't even pick our call. We are really suffering.
A number of business owners have introduced several cost-cutting measures aimed at ensuring that businesses remain buoyant. Emmanuel Oduor works for a travel agency company, was forced to take unpaid leave, a move he says has disoriented him.
Tourism depends entirely on arrivals and departures. Being that the airport is closed means that basically everything pertaining to tourism is closed as well. Most of the companies, travel companies, have been forced to send their staff home as we wait for the situation to get back to normal.
According to the survey, women are the most affected by loss of jobs compared to their male counterparts. Mr. Yatani says most of the companies are going through hard financial times, and therefore paying workers may be difficult.
These are problems like no other before, at least not in our lifetime. Our exports has drastically reduced. Import of inputs into a number of our industries have also gone down. The ability, the tourism, the service sector is more or less on the knees. For our own situation, we are not very certain yet whether we are going to go for it, because the accompanying conditions are a bit tough, because we will not be expected to borrow during this period.
The report shows uncertainty about jobs is growing as the country registers the highest number of COVID-19 cases as per yesterday, Wednesday, raising the number to 1,029 positive cases. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Still on COVID-19, President Donald Trump is doubling down on his decision to take a controversial drug despite scant evidence that the anti-malaria drug is effective at stopping infection or cures patients with the coronavirus. On another front, the president is pushing forward with his threat to permanently withdraw funding from the World Health Organization. White House correspondent Patsy Wadikoswara reports from Washington.
President Donald Trump, who reportedly has tested negative for the coronavirus, defended his decision to take hydroxychloroquine. He said he has been taking it for the past 2 weeks and dismissed an unnamed survey about the drug.
If you look at the one survey, the only bad survey, they were giving it to people that were in very bad shape. They were very old, almost dead. It was a Trump enemy statement.
There's little known about the drug's effectiveness in battling the coronavirus, but it could have serious side effects, including heart problems. David Sullivan is a professor of molecular microbiology and immunology at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health.
I would not recommend people just taking it to try to prevent them getting the virus at the present time, because the risks do outweigh the benefits if you're just trying to take it for prevention, unless you're in a randomized clinical trial where you can find the answer.
In the middle of the drug dust-up, President Trump is also pushing ahead with his threat to permanently cut off funding for the World Health Organization, accusing the WHO of allowing China to cover up its part in the coronavirus outbreak.
Basically, they have to clean up their act. They have to do a better job. They have to be much more fair to other countries, including the United States.
As U.S. criticism mounted, WHO member states agreed to an independent probe into the U.S. agency's coronavirus response. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
WHO remains fully committed to transparency, accountability, and continuous improvement.
Trump declined to speak at the assembly where Xi Jinping addressed WHO members. The Chinese president said he supported an investigation, but said it should wait until the pandemic is contained. He also announced China will provide $2 billion to help with the COVID-19 response in developing countries. Robert Daly is the director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Woodrow Wilson Center.
China is now working with the rest of the WHO as a member, and it can use that inside the tent status and its professed willingness, I think you can question its sincerity, to be part of the investigation. I think we can expect to see China use that insider status to slow walk and limit the investigation going forward, whereas the United States increasingly is placing itself outside of that process.
The U.S. supported the WHO resolution, but objected the call for universal, timely, and equitable access to vaccines, saying the language used would send the wrong message to innovators concerned about intellectual property. Patsy Wadikoswara, VOA News, Washington.
In New York City, the rate of new cases of COVID-19 has slowed, but the epic struggle of hospital health workers to save and to heal the thousands of patients infected with the virus continues around the clock because COVID-19 attacks the lungs. Pulmonary specialists of all types are especially needed in the fight. For the next part of our ongoing series of interviews with frontline health workers, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke by Zoom with Cindy Venesi, a registered respiratory therapist who left her family in New Jersey over a month ago to serve in a teeming Brooklyn hospital.
I'm working in a crisis response unit with the nurses and physicians to try to keep as many people alive as possible. There's a lot going on.
Now, do you intubate patients yourself? Just to explain to our listeners, intubation is putting a breathing tube down somebody's mouth, down their throat, into the lungs to force them to breathe.
No. In this particular hospital, we manage the vents. We watch the waveforms. We have to follow their blood work. We have to know their pre-existing health condition. You have to look at the telemonitors. We work with the nurse if they need more sedation. You really have to know your whole patient to manage events successfully.
It was late March, early April, when the extent of the catastrophe was really becoming clear. What was the scene like at work in those days?
First, it was one patient to a room. Then it was two patients to a room. There's patients on stretchers everywhere. There's people on oxygen tanks and hallways.
So, of course, there are lots of ventilators involved.
Yes, lots of ventilators, lots of BiPAP, CPAP, intubating. It's almost like an assembly line, like you're almost numb to it because you're already going into the situation expecting them to die. every 5 minutes, there was rapid response, rapid response.
What's rapid response mean in an emergency room?
A rapid response is somebody clinically has deteriorated and you want the whole team to come there to try to save this patient. They're coming down body bag and taking them away.
It's become a really common sight here in New York to see makeshift morgues outside the hospitals.
There was trailers outside with body bags in them because the morgue was overflowed.
How does a typical workday start for you these days? How do you cope with what's ahead?
Park your car and then you just sit in your car for a couple of minutes and just try to clear your head as much as possible because you know you're going into something. As much as you want to try to save people, a lot of them are going to die. You're going to have multiple deaths on your conscience every day. Go into the room, get report, try to look at the patients, their records, and see their notes and see what's going on. And then you gown up, mask, eyewear, shield, sonnets, everything. Try to keep yourself covered as much as possible and you start your day.
That sounds really scary.
It's very scary. I actually have an autoimmune ailment and I could end up being one of these patients in a bed, but I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I love helping, and if I go out helping somebody, then it is what it is. But I'm always scared because I have parents at home. I have kids at home.
How old are your kids?
I have a 10-year-old daughter and a 5-year-old son.
How are they doing with all this?
My daughter, she kind of watches the news, and so she knows what's going on and what I'm doing. So she's always a little on the anxious side, but we talk every day. We text all the time. I send her pictures and try to reassure her, and she know I'll drop everything and come back home to her.
And your young son?
My son just thinks I'm a superhero. He's just like, that's really just how he sees it.
That's how I see it too, actually.
Oh, thank you.
Is all this what you signed up for when you trained to become a respiratory therapist?
Yes, but the one thing that we didn't sign up for was not having enough equipment and not having enough PPE. That's what we didn't sign up for. Like the mask, you get one for the week and you're reusing it for days on end. It's not fair that we don't have the proper tools to make sure we're safe ourselves.
Because of how contagious COVID is, people mostly die alone in these hospitals or with only one family member present at most. You told me about one of your typical experiences comforting a woman whose mother had just suddenly died.
Yes, she was just walking down the hallway. I'm coming back from whatever floor I was on, and she just broke down crying in the hallway by herself. Can't have any of her support system. Her mom just died, And of course, I'm in my little mini hazmat suit, and I'm like, I can't really touch her, but she really needs a hug. And I took my hazmat suit off and took all my equipment off, and I just gave her a hug and let her cry on my shoulder. And then she said she felt better, and she went her way. I put everything back on, and I went my way.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with a very traditional song entitled Longa Siri Yedi Kondi Nyo, meaning, my brothers, what can we do?
De longa sere ke de kiru kondi nyo konginina.
Miru longa sere ma juma, longa ki kondongo, kota ke la barili. De longa jiti bapa ya kolo yunyuki ya wafari. Longa sere ke de kiru kondi nyo konginina. Miru longa sere ma juma, longa ki kondongo, kota ke la barili. De longa jiti bapa ya kolo yunyuki ya wafari.
I've been listening to a very traditional song entitled Longa Siri Yedi Kondi Nyo, meaning, my brothers, what can we do now? My knowledge of body language is a little bit rusty because I don't come from there. But just for your knowledge, the body are found in Central Equatorial State, specifically in Juba. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.